Era para depois de Rashi, towards the end, I address myself a question, which here deals with some extent marginally, but which in other areas, in other respects, was a major focus of the debate amongst the Shanim and worked up a great deal of tension, a great deal of storm. If you recall, he had spoken earlier, the early part of the Rashi, about the question of the Malach, and that connection we dealt with two parashas, the parasha of the Malach, Shpatim and Malach Kisisa, and noted that Rashi in Mishpatim says the Malach, which is referred to over there, anticipates the Malach is going to discuss the Kisisa, which is pretty much the direction that the Ran follows. I mentioned my own understanding that these are two totally different contexts. Malach of Shpatim was there because they weren't ready, they weren't sufficiently ripe to experience the presence of Shekhinah. And Kisisa was all part of Reinish, and they were not deserving, they weren't ready, but they were deserving the presence of Shekhinah. And this relates to the earlier part of the Drosha. Towards the end, he does himself the questions which come up in a number of contexts, some of which is dealt with here, some are not. The basic problem here is, if you will, the degree of monotheism and how radical that is. Broadly speaking, of course, monotheism, that's what we're all about. That's probably had two flags. One was the flag of Gnus Chassadim, that was that of Yichud Hashem. And Mun and Yichud Hashem is, of course, critical and central. Kelech Ha'ad Kol Hayom is particularly over that particular point. So that is beyond question. Chas Shalom, that anyone should think otherwise. But in terms of what room is left for secondary potentiary essences and realities, and how one is to relate to the whole world of magic and superstition, here there's a difference of opinion. And there are two sorts. One has to do with what one's perception is. Of course, it's a great deal of speculation, but speculation which is grounded in one form or another of Pesukim, not necessarily in the Torah, particularly in Nevi'im, but how the transcendental world looks, how it's structured. Or for that matter, what one understands by transcendental as opposed to immanent. In one sense, where there's total transcendence, and of course the total severance eventually for the rest of the world, for the created world, and Malachim are part of the created world. And there you have the severance of eventually learn from anything else, part of its uniqueness, that degree of separation. And there Chazal speaks nonetheless about the Gavoi, about the Broi, Machiyah, which speaks in a somewhat anthropomorphic note of weeping on the part of the Ben Shalim, of Stavish Kenafshi. One makes a distinction about the Gavoi, about the Broi, inner chambers, outer chambers, those within which the total severance of the creature from the creator is there, and some other dimension in which there is a degree of revelation and the inner presence of Shekhinah at some plane. Here, of course, you have particularly the Ramban HaTorah as opposed to the Rambam. The Rambam speaks of the Malachim, you can't quite avoid them. But it gives them a very minor role. And he has some text and curse Chazal to back that up. So in mind of what I mean, there's no authority, there's no control, there's no sense of a division of authority. Authority controls all his hands of Ben Shalelu. And the Malach, this of course you have in Tanakh in many places, a semantic level, is a Shaliach. As the very much we describe, Shach Malachim Midbak, the Motis Chomecher, Hamuri Lembo, when he said Malachim didn't send angels. He said, come to Lisa Rice. He said, agents. And for the Rambam, the line between Malach in that sense and the angelic sense is a very thin one, because the Malachim themselves, that's all they do. They have a mission to perform. And of course, Chazal Fabil, Chazal Bina Pashas, Vayera, the three Malachim, because each of them is separate tasks to perform. And one Malach can't do two Shlichuyot. That only makes sense if you understand that being a Malach is essentially being a Shliach. So Shliach is one task to do. If being a Malach is being undersecretary of something or other, a certain division, so why can't one have one Shlichut? Maybe not simultaneously, successfully, but they're there. And the Rambam throughout the Menavuchim and other places, when he talks about Malachim, and he discusses the Menavuchim, these are agents, emissaries sent to perform a particular task, and once they perform that task, they're off center, they're off stage, they're retired. Rambam, of course, has a totally different picture. And part of the distinction between the Rambam and the Ramban with regard to the degree of transcendence, imminence, has to do with this. The Ramban has a highly populated upper world. And, well, of course, the Ramban understood. Chas v'Shalom, if otherwise, Kavoy saw the Ben Shalom, but he delegates authority. It's a federated kind of setup, which the Ben Shalom is at the apex. And then there are many divisions. That has to do some extent with terrestrial arrangements. But terrestrial is affected by super terrestrial arrangements. And this is the fundamental setup. Rambam draws to some extent the Psukim Sefer Daniel, you seem to speak in that vein, the four Sarim that are mentioned over there, which we shan't later on to considerably. And this division means that every nation has its own Sar Shalesov and other Sarim. And of course, to some extent, it draws upon, this is part of the reason we have some difficulty with it, part of the fact that our gut instincts, given the fact that the heavens, which at one time were seen as belonging to some other creatures, since Kepler and Galileo, those belong to us, which I mean there's total continuity between the earth and the other celestial bodies. So now, so in some sense, we have a clearer, sharper sense of the presence of Ben Shalem in its total solitude. And secondly, the notion that some authority can be divided, can be assigned, doesn't sit very well with us. But for the Ramban, this exists, and a number of places where the point of departure for him, before he gets to who governs which nation, who's in charge of what, the notion of the division, sort of, to use Tennyson's phrase, Parliament of Man, the Federation of the World, that's where it's all divided. And this for the Ramban is very central, as far as uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. Continue with the Pesukim in Hazinu that I quoted previously, Kicheri Hashem Yaakov Chevron Nacharato, all other nations, they go through the secretary of the undersecretary, Shamashim Meshorsim, Rashim Meshorsim. And if necessary, maybe they can make an end run about some of these lower officials and make it to the top. But the normal route, the normal channel, on the one hand of their governance and their authority, and secondly of the access to them, it's through, or access to Shemaim, it's through these various forces. The uniqueness of Klal Yisrael is this is a Mazal Yisrael, which doesn't mean Mazal in the sense that we speak today of good fortune, but Kechavim Mazalis. Mazalis is another strain, another genre of heavenly bodies. Klal Yisrael doesn't have that. It has direct access to the Ben Shleilam. That's what's unique about it, this relationship. Now, then, where the Malachim fit in. So the Malachim, is, according to the Ramban, vis-a-vis Klal Yisrael, they have little to do. The authority is very limited, but generally speaking, they have a role in the department and the division. That's at one point. Now, related to that, the question is how one assumes the, which one should relate to various magical elements or magical disciplines, which at one point or another described in the Torah, and certainly more extensively so in Chazal. This coming week, something we've read very previously about, we'll read about the confrontations in Mitzrayim, Meshach Rabbeinu represented the Machu Shemaim, and Chatumim, Chashmi, Rabinim, Misugayim, representing a different culture. But Ramban is a problem, because he doesn't assume these elements have any kind of power, that they're for real. He's very sharp on that, both in Melon Vuchim and towards the end of Perek Yud Aleph, after Ram was outlined the various Yisurim, which mentioned the Pasuk in Shoftim, Onim, Rach, Chashif, Chavar, Yerev, Yedeli, the whole shebang. Then at that Perek, he says, V'vim Eilu, V'kulan Divrei Shekem Chazav Hei, V'em Sheit, U'u Hei, V'dat Kochavim, Avdei Kochavim, L'Hadmanim, L'Goyah, Ratzot, L'Shinagu Achreha, ויראו לי ישראל שהם חכמים וחוכמים בני משך והבלים באלו ולהעלות הלב שיש תועלת בהן שנאמר כאן נחש ויעקב לא כסף בישראל ונאמר כאילו אלה שאתה יורש אותם ומניעו כסף ישמע ואתה הולכים את הלכה של מלכך כל המאמין בדברים האלו חייצא בנו מחשב בליבו של אמת ודבר חוכמה אבל התורה הסרטו נהנן אלא מן השכלים ומחסרי הדעת ובכלל אנשים והקטנים שאין דעתן שלמה בעלי החוכמה וטובי הדעת ידעו בראיות ברורות שכולל הדברים של שרות התורה אינם דברי חוכמה אלא תוהו והבל שנשכו בחסרי הדעת ונטשו כל דרכי האמת בגללן. וזו אמרה התורה משהזהירה על כל אלו הבלים תמיד תהיה מה שם הלוקח. ובשביל הפלאנג כמו שיש לי כאן. What the Rambam describes over here, the attitude that these are for real, they have actual power, but it's also the Torah Saraton, which the Rambam describes as being the position of Chalim Chesri Adad, because they have a minute Shem assumed. The Ran, not this Ran, but Ran, clearly assumed that. And the Rambam, by and large, also assumed that. And then you had a task of defining, number one, metaphysically speaking, what kind of reality is this? What kind of beings are these? They're not human, they're not superhuman, what are they? Particularly, what is the whole fabric and the structure of Malchus Shamayim? And to what extent may one turn to these enemies and plead with them? This has to do, to some extent, of course, with later Menhagim, Nisroes, Nisroes Tzfilah. At the end of Slichus, you say Malach Rachmi, you don't say Malach Rachmi. You sing Shalom Aleichem with Bochuni, without Bochuni. One of the Yisraelis which the Rambam has in Yudim Malikrim is that one is to turn for sustenance, for assistance, to measure the Meshulim alone. But there's Gemara Sanhedrin, which seems to acknowledge the possibility and legitimacy of turning to other celestial bodies. And of course, we can't say Bochuni in Shalom Aleichem. Why could Yaakov say Bochuni to the Malach? So there's a Malach when he confronted him. I don't know if I've got a clear answer, but other Rishayim indeed did assume, and that sort of was the actual ancillary corollary, if these groups, these beings have authority, makes sense it's the Shem to turn to them, because when Shem put them in that place, it says delegated authority, and Chas V'Cholilu, the Ramash, for a moment of thought, they have autonomy of any kind. It's not autonomous, but as someone who runs a big corporation, big institution, or government for that matter, has areas of authority, and just people sitting and taking care of it, here as well. The modern world, of course, has difficulties with this. It sounds all part of what I said before, because the whole division of the heavens and the earth is very different. But partly also because the whole world of magic and superstition is something which we see as being very primitive and from which we see ourselves being removed. Certainly so, those who speak, as Comte in the 19th century did, and others later on, Malinowski has a book about this, about the juxtaposition of magic, science, and religion, whatever sequence one sees that. But the presumption is that if spiritual, totally spiritual, you have to have some combination, something which is in a sense spiritual, in a sense it's material, as control of this, control of that. Now the question of whether these beings exist and whether they're for real is simply one in itself, how one perceives the Mesh Leilim, and that's some impact upon the question of the role and the degree of anthropomorphism. It's not by accident that the Rambam was so vehement challenging anthropomorphism, not only in its crude sense. Crude anthropomorphism is that which speaks eventually of as having some kind of physical goof and source goof, by which the Rambam, of course, is vehement, and anybody believes that, he says it's a terrible, terrible thing, it's a mean and a precarious, and so on. But I went beyond that. I'm said you couldn't, if you can't describe the relationship as some kind of human physiognomy, you can't describe to him most of human emotions. And the Rambam, followed by the Chinuch, a discussion about Lakta Mitrochov, gets involved in this debate as well. Says Yonachanami, there's no matter what the feeling or emotion by the Ben Shleilam. Of course, the Rambam knew that all Tanakh is against him. But part of what the Rambam did in the study of Tanakh was, and he's very explicit about this, very honest about it, allegorize much of it, disposed of a good deal in the interest of maintaining a degree of philosophic purity and integrity. To the extent that you ascribe the quote-unquote metaphysical structure of the heavens, describe it as one which within which there is total solitude of virtually that sets him off completely, and then there's no common denominator, neither physical nor emotional, between him and anybody else, and everything which is described in Tanakh, Charinav, it's all mashal. This is very, very problematic. It's problematic in two respects. First of all, that's correct. All said and done, Psukim very sharp, and precisely because the physical anthropomorphism is of a cruder sort, it's easier to reject that. Speak of emotions, expressions of anger, of warmth, favoritism, etc., etc., that doesn't strike us to be quite so crude. Therefore, unless we probably ascribe it to the Ben Shleilam. But perhaps precisely for that reason, the Rambam felt the need to emphasize that point very, very strongly, because he didn't want to have any kind of anthropomorphism, neither physical nor spiritual, not emotional, nothing. This is one aspect of the difficulty. I wrote at one point, this which dealt with the subject of suffering, but towards the end I contrasted with Yavid Chazal, with Rambam, and it's very difficult to see them as being on the same track on this particular issue. And the Midrashim, they go totally out of their way to ascribe feelings of the bench later, weeping and pity and self-pity. And the other point is that there may be a reason as to why the Midrashim are full of this talk. One reason is because Psukim Neter and Psukim Nevim, which speak in this vein. But quite independently of that, in terms of the level of Yiras Hashem, the ability to bound Kavi Yochel with the Ben Shleilam, to address him, to try to come close to him. You come back to the question of transcendence and immanence, or if you will, two levels of immanence, that which is more anthropomorphic, that which is less so. And here the Chazal, whatever Pesukim speak, of a Sidba, Cheshul Yavtelechu, Malach Midracho, Chayav Shul Alech, Havdech Kashboch, or Eitzu Eich Le'esh, as Sifri asks. And that's very much the spirit of the Rambam. But in other respects, acknowledging that we can't come too close, Eshech Le'esh, and therefore, Pesukim speak of Vaisidba, mean marry off your daughter to Talmid Chacham. That leaves one with a certain distance from the Ben Shleilam, that's where Eshech Le'esh comes in. And if one can live with that distance, Matov. can be tough emotionally. Most people have a great difficulty with that. They want to finish Shiva Shemayim, they don't want just to finish Malkeinu. They want access, and to a great extent they're animated, I say they, I mean we, animated by the spirit of the Yerushalmi Brachis. The last part of the Yerushalmi says that the Zohar, the Bnei Shleilam, are two different extremities. The Zohar, Lireis Kova, Venele Rechoka. What's Lireis Kova? Because it's very similar to the human world, human reality. Toynbee, in his book on Greek culture, says the besetting sin of Greek civilization, besides this point, the anthropomorphism. The closeness between what's the foot of Olympus with the top of Olympus, pretty much the same. That's the Nireis Kova. But then another chokah, what happened to Eliyahu Bar Carmel, the Vihabal, they bang and they weep, they've been korbanos, they do everything that they can, stuff up to the bankers, Gosh and Gosh. Basically, the Punt Fakyat, near a chok, very dull a korev. Why is the near a chok? So Chazal speaks from distances. Of course, from our perception, distances are laughable. Because the seven Lakim and each Lakim has the nexus for his Malach Hamesh Vashana. Sagamako Mikkel Kale has come to a couple of thousand years. We speak in terms of light years and many, many light years. But the notion is there, Nires Rechoko, Nire Rochik. But we're in El Korev. Why is it near El Korev? Man comes to Shul. Woman, I forget who is set over there, stands Mechere Omud, speaks in a low voice, and he says, speak in a loud voice, it wasn't Brachis, inter alia because of the possible conclusion the person would draw, as happened within V'Abal. V'Abal spoke in a loud voice, and Eliyahu twitted them. Maybe he's hard of hearing. Speak louder. So a person speaks, that was a loud voice. The implication is that the, makes the news to the Bnei Shleilam to hear him when you want to hear him. Every Amud is talking softly, and the Bnei Shleilam listens to him. Shenemak Hashem Elokeinu b'chol koreinu elo. And that's what we want. And that's preferred to Knesset Yisrael as a bonus. As a part of Knesset Yisrael, B'chol K'rein Eilo. But that assumes a certain proximity, a certain degree of access, which within the scheme of the Rambam and the feeling tone that comes through the discussion of this topic, to a great extent absent. There's a little bit of familiarity. And it's not just Yireh as opposed to Ahavah, which of course is part of the issue. It's the nature of the Yireh. Distance, remoteness. So you have, to some extent, two different perceptions of the existing reality, two different conceptions the nature of the religious experience as it is and as it up and as it ought to be. Now this brings us back to some extent on both fronts, both that what is what how you can ask the two planes. Footnote here, it's a footnote which is introduced in order to expand the part of the statement, which is maybe the Ran, this is just a page. ויאגר בו המלאך ולא ישתך. ואלו כן דוד וכמצים את דניאל, שראה המלאך וכיבד אותו מאוד, ואומרו, איך יוכל הבל אדוני זה לדבר עם אדוני זה, אבל לא ישתכבה, כי לא היה מוטה בכך. וכן איך חושב ישוע ישתכבה למלאך ונראה אליו. התשובה זה, דדו בכאן זה מלאך and gradations, the one which is mentioned in משפט המקיסיסו, is distinct and separate. For that here, קוס מן ריאז וסהדרין, אבל הוא אינו מקבלו עליו ללא רע, הוא משתחווה לו שיעזור לו יליץ בעדו, וכן שכתוב, והנה מלכן בא לעזרני שצריך לעזרת המלאך, הוא מפייסו שיעזור לו, הואיל ואין מקבלו ללא רע, לאו עובד עבודה זרה, הוא אף פשוט משתחווה לו. אז בא לי לטקסט הוא יסתה, לא, שתחווה חס וחסקר. Here is a view, admittedly somebody else, Shtachbah is also proper. I won't go into the old details of the halachas. If there is a Shtachbah without Kabbalah Salahus, what do you do? Of course, Rashi and Tesis, whether Kabbalah Salahus is a condition of defining something as Avodah Zarah. There's no question that someone who's oriented to the world of the Rambam and this connection, shocked by this kind of statement. You mishtachve, and you state to the Malach, you ask him, Bolo Azreini, Vishtzir Ezrat HaMalach, Mephaiso Shiazor Lo, as long as no Kabbalah Salahus. Of course, the question is, what is Salahus? Salahus is power, is authority. So if you say, is that the big chief? Little chief. It's also a Kabbalah of sorts. I'm certainly have nothing of this. Towards the end, he talks about the Rambam, פגע ושפגיד וכן נותנים ורם זבר אליו בו וכן ראשית מהמורה זה פרי זה לגמר כזו שיש משהו רפואה משהו דרך כאלה מוירי כבר יש בועצת משהו רפואה so סתם רם נסתו לגמר שבס לתספטה פשוט גם משמוע רפואה ממש זה שזה סטטיפיק בייסס experimental proof etc etc Rambam says, this is quoting here, וכתב שם, אל יקשה בינך מה שיתירו בהם כמסבר הצלוב ושן השועל, כי הדברים בהם בזמן ההוא היו חושבים שהוציא אותו הניסיון, אז זה התלות העשר, ולפי במדע אתם thought of scientific validity, אבל דווקא זה עזנת קרם על דרך מהירי. After the Ran quotes this Rambam, So then he says, surprisingly, what is his conclusion? Ram seems to be saying over here that anything which has scientific or philosophic evidence, even a TV, that's fine. But not anything beyond that. What does he say over here? Ram, Eru Dvarav Zalta Rambam, V'yitchayim Bazeh, Shukom HaShasrao Tan Torah, והדברים בבטלים שהם בהם ממש, ואם להשיג רצון המשפיע, that's what we're talking about, that's also שהוא דבר שאין לו אמיתות. אבל הכי נמתפעל, אם בטבע גלו יודע אליו כמשפטי הסגולות, לא עשרה זה התורה כלל. It's as if you want to manipulate the source, a plenitude, a bounty, that's also. Unlike the Yasm she quoted before, the footnote seems to come to terms with that as well. But if you want to obtain the same result, but by a different route, instead of manipulating the mashpia, you manipulate the mushpa. Then he says it's fine. I had a question whether Rabban would agree to that. Then he goes on to, instead of the word of Kishuv, Amash Behani Bazer, we done a Kishuv Shratan to Rabbi Ferush, Brota Sekemasehem, Vein Safek, Shu Inyan Amiti, Avi Shuzal, namely the Rambam, Katapurak and Iskar, Shu Devar Batel, En Amitut Lo, that's the parallel passage in Meruvuchim, to what I quoted to you from Mishnah Tayor, Ein Zedat Chazal, Becham Mekomot. And in effect, what he says is that he rejects Rambam's view of this and juxtaposes it with Chazal's view, which he does accept. And then he asks, of course, why, if given what he's talking about, namely manipulate the recipient and not manipulate the giver, so why shouldn't Kishuv be permitted in that vein? Anyway, the bottom line is that we have two different views of what the supreme reality is, with all the implications that that has for the nature of one's way to Hashem and one's conception of the eventually and what is legitimate and what is not legitimate. And this, of course, relates to another plane to the Rambam, the end of Perkirav Chazavisky Chavim, and the Ramban. Rambam concludes after that whole diatribe against people who think that this is for real. Mepizema Torah b'kishisira kol elu ha'avalim, tamim tiyah v'ashem molokecho. What is the tamim tiyah for the Rambam? Don't be a socher, don't be a damn fool. Don't let yourself be led and misled by things which have no substance in the reality. That's good for Noshim and Ketanim. It's not for us, the doctrine of Yaakov Kesem Yisrael. So to be Tomim is to be smart, to be correct, to be philosophically sophisticated. That's the Tomim which is demanded of us. If that's the case, in a certain sense, we're not being asked here to make much of a religious sacrifice, or to sacrifice much of the sake of religion. If you were told that this is a wonderful way to make money, to be successful in life, but don't do it because the Vesha mastered it. That's a sacrifice. If you knew you could foretell the future course of the stock market, and instead you're told, go to this guru to ask what's going on, what's going to be, you said, learn, daven, say tilim, rely upon the bench later. But if the Rambam tells you, don't go to this guru because he's a phony, he doesn't know any better than you do, all he does is charge a lot of money for his fees. What's the sacrifice not going to? So what you need to do here is to be philosophically savvy, wise, insightful, sophisticated. That's what Tom MTM means. I'll leave aside the question of the whether the term tamim fits in with this very readily, but to imagine this is what the demand should be made of us, presumably it is a demand at two levels. First, the initial demand for tamim was presented to Avraham Avinu, derech v'nevi yeh tamim. Secondly, that was the middle part of Shoftim, tamim Hashem Elokecha. I think that what was demanded is philosophic sophistication. It's not quite what we expect. This is just prior to the Akedah. The Akedah, that's a sacrifice. But not to go to some people, somebody who told us this, fool, but sacrifice. The Ramban, precisely, because he thinks that there is substance and meaning to these group parties, and they do know what's to go on, they have some influence, they have some impact, but you are told, with regard to the religious experience, which to a great extent is one which has to do with trust, dependence, with reliance, but I don't go chasing anybody else, even though you might derive some apparent benefits from the knowledge you would attain. That's a sacrifice. And of course, what this generates in us is a sense. A further difference to the Ram and the Ramban in this respect. There's no question that both the Ram and the Ramban subscribe to a certain phalanx of values and experiences in terms of Avodas Hashem. It's as if one was totally this, one was totally that. But towards the emphases, certainly there is a difference. Rambam striving for Das. Das for him being Tzelem Elokim in the second chapter of Levuchim. To a great extent, religious experience, religious life is suffused with understanding, with perception. Yes, that was David's way to say. David told Shleim Amalu, David Elokim Avich. A man, for his part, acknowledges something to be gained by knowing, by understanding, but it's much closer to more romantic conception of religion. Shlomo Amar used to speak as the Havdol before him did the Maral, the essence of religious life has been a sense of dependence, trusting, relying on the Ben Shalom. Talking for him is a tremendous thing. Here you have a reflection of that. Don't go there, stick with the Ben Shalom. And here the element of reliance and trust, of course, is emphasized rather than giving you some kind of insight. As we might have expected, as we've seen in other respects, the Rosh Saran makes every effort to reconcile the Rambam and the Ramban. He's closer, by and large, to the school of the Ramban, but it's as if he would dismiss the Rambam. And despite the fact that here you heard this couple of lines that I read, what the Rambam says, Ein Zedad Rabbi Chazal B'chamam Komod, the furor which is raised by these views of the Rambam in Shem's times, particularly Provence, that's totally absent here. It's total respect for the Rambam. Challenged him at one point, at a point here or there. In Provence, particularly the following generation of the Rashba, They was furious, and it had to do with questions of heresy at one level or another. That is nothing here. But let's try to have something to have his cake and eat it. This I mentioned by way of completing some themes raised in the fourth drasha. Fifth drasha, which comes here in two versions, returns to the themes, which some of which were developed and even developed some degree of fullness earlier drasha, particularly the third. One of the things which interested him greatly, as we've already seen in other drashas, is the phenomenon of nevuah. What nevuah is all about. In this respect, he's following the Rambam. Rambam writes in the Ekdomet, no, in Chelik, in Pishusant and Brachas, excuse me. He's going to do work in nevuah. That work is such never fully materialized, but there's a good deal which has to do with the subject of Nevuah in Meron Nevuchim, and likewise in Pishnais and Chelek and in Brachas as well. To some extent, there's some question here about what the role of the Navi is, and what his identity is. The caption for this next drush is the Gemara, Amar Yonatan Yekosh Boroshesh Kotel Chacham Gibor Vashir, Vana Vachulam Moshe. The Ran subsequently questions why this is important. Why does that be strong? Why does that be wealthy? So you have Anova, which is a great moral virtue, and the Gemara Brazil says is the top of the Sudam of Yerpiris Ben Yoir. Anova is the greatest virtue. Chacham can understand. Why Gibor Anoshu? He gives here an answer which is similar to the one which we saw in another connection. Although in the opposite direction. Maybe because he asks, Moshe wants to send Moshe Rabbeinu as a Navi to present Torah to Klal Yisrael. So why of all the people in the world did he have to pick someone who stutters and stammers? Or in this drasha, he says, not only a question of picking somebody who stutters and stammers and fastening the crown of Nu upon his head, but the Beshem is the one who made him stutter, made him stammer. Misam Pela Adam Bo Ilaim, who made him Ilaim in the first place. And that becomes a bigger problem, because the Navi should be perfect. The answer which he gives over there, when he talks about the stammering, is that the Ben Shleilam did not want that people should be swept off their feet by oratory. We have a new president of the United States, a tremendous orator, that's the biggest smiler. I hope you have more kirchers too, but meanwhile, big kirchers b'fiv. That gets people impressed, gets them elected. And he writes there that inasmuch as people are impressed by a mellifluous orator, so if people would hear Taylor from someone who was an Obama, you would always suspect maybe the reason they were impressed by Taylor, not because of its content and substance, because of the way that it was said. So therefore, the bishop picked so much stutters and stammers to realize that the impact of the imprint is all because of the actual content. It was something which troubled him. And the answer which he gives here to a great extent is that the function of a Navi, and he relates to this, semantically as well. Fakshtabanavi is to bring the word of the Rishon to the people, transmit a message, he will bring you what you have to say, what your thoughts, your ideas, you'll bring these to the people. Now this brings a focus of the Nevuah upon the social role. Page where here is Samach Gimel, but Shubaba said, "Vim yisrech anavi anevuah ashlim laatzmo levad lo lezudato." I wish he anavi mishim mitzuba shlemuyot eshet ishlam nefesh bam b'miaguf shalem b'chaser. If nevuah were a personal experience, then you would look for this kind of perfection. אבל נביא שינבא להמון ומודיע מה שציבה שם יתברך, יצטרך שיהיו נבחר ונרצה מכל הכיתות, בהווי החוכמה ובהווי העושר ובהווי הגבורה, ושיש לי לומר את המידות. It's the way we're oriented and directed first and foremost to inspire, to direct the Navi. Then you wouldn't worry, does he have the qualities which impress people or not? We would have to weigh, objectively speaking, which qualities are important. And that scale, being a gibor, being an usher, that got too much ice. But he says, a novi, who's have a lamon, he has to transmit the word of worship to the public. He has to be a person who has the qualities which impress everybody. He's wealthy and he's chic and he's handsome and he's smart and he talks with nicely. Everything. In the Amun, there's almost nothing of this. That, of course, has to do with some other elements as well. It's last week's Pashmos, those who. Ashkenazim, the Haftar was Nishayo. But this was far, the Haftar was a Divrei Rabbi Yom HaChikiyo. What we learned in the few weeks. One of the things which comes up over there is the reluctance on the part of Yomiyo to accept the mantle of Nevuah. The Abarbanel, it's a kedomet Yirmiyahu who takes the Amun to task. The Rambam both of Yom Vuchim and Perek Zayin Mechisei Latera speaks of Nevuah Bashamayim, a regimen which is long and arduous and tortuous and intensive intellectually, religiously, morally, all of that. And it's all geared being part of a coterie of Bnei Nevi'im, and he says sometimes you have all it takes and you don't make it. It's not just the course of study that you got good grades and therefore you deserve what you want, you deserve a diploma. But the focus is on a group which is concerned first and foremost with its own spiritual development. Very different this respect from what the Iran has over here. Why the Abarbanel charge the Ram says, if you need all the qualities that Ram discusses, for example, of Seder Torah, how can Yirmiyahu say that Na'aronech in B'tzah Matzach B'Beta in Yidaticha, the Meshav tells him, where's all the preparation? So of course, if you think of the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu, being, or you as a novice, be somewhat different, namely that maybe he was not raw yet to be a novice, but the message had to be conveyed to Klal Yisrael. So the Meshav picked someone who's not so sophisticated, Nonetheless, started from the Nevuah. That might be. But of course, it takes some of the sheen off of the Rambam's presentation of what the Nevuah is all about, what it should be all about. So while the Rambam certainly shares with Rosh Hashanah here the fascination with the Rambam of Nevuah, but it's really the two different conceptions. In a sense, what for the Rambam becomes diminished as compared to Rosh Hashanah is the public role and the historical contextual role. But in the first version tells Yirmiyahu is, never mind, you are qualified, you're not qualified. Makom she'einish, the message has got to be gotten across, and you need to fulfill a historical role, you'll do it, even if you're not fully up to snuff. For that, the Rambam leaves a little room. He doesn't see the fact that you are live a certain period and have a certain historical role to perform. He doesn't not inclined to see that as justifying your hand of the mantle in the Nevuah, even though you're not holy. Now, practically speaking, of course, one could have two kinds of Nevi'im. Nevi'im which is for them to rise, for them to be inspired, and others that play a certain role. But these are different conceptions. The Rav, who somewhat surprisingly deals with Nevuah at the end of Isha Aloche, a central category of religious life, which should be oriented to Nevuah, which runs counter very much to his grain, in a sense, the grain of Rizk of Aloshim. But there he speaks of Nevuah as the current common coin, so to speak, something which each one is to aspire to. But the Rav Sodi is not talking there about the prospect that everyone be Navi and have a message to deliver. He's talking about a certain spiritual law which is to be attained. And here you have in Sefer Shmuel, like Shmuel ben Avim, what was the nature of that question? But when he also, is that what it takes spiritually speaking? I will stop here. As I've said, the next parasha is in two versions. The differences are significant, but not shemaim. So we'll try to take care of both next time. Now, not next week, but the following week. Tuesday night, I leave for the States for a couple of days. I don't want to miss a shiur. Would Monday night be in the ballpark? It's just a one-time thing. I'm back here on Tuesday, the following Tuesday, so it's only that week. The following week, go back to Wednesday regularly.
This is next week, or
the week after? No. Next week, we're at the regular schedule. I'll talk about the following week. We'll give you a little advance warning.
So what, the regular time?
Can we say that, I mean, in terms of, we said that there's certain delegates, right, not the role appointed to run. So don't we say also that Moshe has certain, as we've seen many times, that many times, certain times when like Hashem, his mind, Kiryahu, has changed.
It doesn't change his mind.
I mean, yeah, like, for example, by a foul, I mean, we discussed this all this, but so, it's not like the
man in clouds, what's in the cloud? Pasha Shmuel, Taylor, Pasha Zohar, so there, same pellet as mentioned me. The version doesn't change, the mind doesn't change, the thought doesn't change the world. So at the end, the parak said he regrets the appointed show of his mother. Shem Nicha, you live at your Israel. So before that, I tell you, Shkevra Yinachem, Kiro Adam Ulu Yinachem. We have a steer right there. This issue comes up, particularly at the end of Ramban, at the end of Pasuk Bereishis. When I come to Kiyasitim, specials with great version of great. And then the Ramban raised the issue. He said, Kabbalah, there's some solution about Nigle that you do this.
This is now,
and also, isn't what in Baruch Shmi, we say, Allah bar,
I'm adapted to Prime's meaning. Prime.
So I read that, Prime didn't since.
I said, the implication is that they exist in a life on it. Cut that out.
Because they don't even exist, we're saying. Is that why you cut it out? Why didn't you say it?
Because you said they don't exist altogether.
But
there is no Bar-Elohim.
What's Bar-Elohim? What does Bar-Elohim mean in literal sense? The sun, like.
Yeah. That's a question I have to
ask. Because it sounds like you could
the end
like,
of the end of Pasha Breshis, who is Bnei Elohim referred to? A powerful, a mighty, influential.
It sounds like it could mean, like we said, that you're allowed to ask Malachim, according to your busy, you could ask.
I said, but some assume that you can.
So that would be the same, wouldn't it be the same motion? Yeah.